and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Radio always did a good job on stories of the supernatural, using your imagination for the special effects. This week we have one of the greatest actors of that genre, Boris Karloff, as a scientist who brings his wife back from the dead. Find out how that works out, if you dare. This is Lights Out, Death Robbery, first broadcast July 16th, 1947 on ABC.
It clicked.
It clicked.
It clicked.
What clicked?
The Eversharp Chic Injector Razor, made by Eversharp, manufacturers of Eversharp Chic Injector Razors and Blades, and famous Eversharp Precision Writing Instruments.
Hideous things come out of the darkness to prowl the tortured earth. Evil hands stretch forth to seize. Evil eyes are watching. Unholy voices whisper and quarrel in the fearful silence. Death stalks. Loathsome, horrible death. Dare you put out your lights and listen to Boris Karloff in a story of horror in the deepening darkness? Dare you listen to Lights Out?
I'm glad you brought up the question of ethics, Ed. Sometimes I think science is too ethical. Stands in the way of research.
I don't know, David. Take your work, for example. It's wonderful, but you have to be very cautious. I think working with monkeys is about as far as you should go right now.
Oh, but Ed, David is past that stage. Why not show Ed the one you worked on today, darling?
If you'd like to see it, Ed. It's right in the lab.
Yes, I would. I saw it last night after you injected the poison.
I'll get it, David.
Thank you, dear. It's in the second cage.
Ruth's a wonderful girl, David. Must be a big help to you in your work.
Don't know what I'd do without her. But if she ever gets too interested in pure science, I'm gonna lock her out of the lab and just make her go back to being a wife.
How do you find time for a wife?
Now, look here. All you practicing surgeons think the research man is a machine. Not me, Ed. Ruth means more to me than all the discoveries I might make. Her happiness is all I live and work for.
Well, I can't say that I blame him. She's a very charming person.
Here he is.
Same one you saw last night, Ed. Stone dead. And there he is, just as healthy and alive as any other monkey.
Why, it's amazing, David. Naturally, I followed all the experiments along this line, but you seem to have progressed much farther.
David can't go any farther with animals. He's ready for the next step, and he can do it.
Well, I'm all for research, David, but you have a moral obligation in this sort of thing. How do you know it'll work with human beings?
Oh, you're a surgeon yourself, Ed. You know that human beings are animals, just like all the subjects I've used. I know it'll work.
Well, knowing it won't get you far with society. You'll have to submit proof.
I know that, and I've tried every way I can think of to get a human being to demonstrate on.
He's tried insane asylums, penitentiaries, everywhere.
No one will listen to me.
Well, in a way, you can't blame him. Even to me, with my training, the idea seems, well, blasphemous.
My dear Ed, you can't stop scientific progress because of a so-called moral concept.
Besides, what could be less blasphemous than a triumph over death?
I'm sorry, but I can't see it that way. I wouldn't want to try it on me. When I'm dead, I want to stay dead.
Oh, that foolish, Ed. Well, if I die first, I want David to use me for a subject.
Ruth.
Don't look so startled, Ed. She's always been my strongest supporter. But I'm not going to use her as a subject. I like her too well as a wife.
Still, it gives me the shivers to hear you talk that way, Ruth.
Why? I've seen David's work grow to where the technique is perfect. Before long, his experiments will be recognized by the whole medical world. And if I can help him achieve that goal, I'm willing to do anything. Living or dead. I mean it.
Hello,
She said she wanted to do it, Ed, living or dead.
David, you're surely not going to hold her to that. Not now.
Of course I am. She meant it.
But
I called you over here tonight, Ed, because I need help.
Don't tell me that.
But I want you to help me bring Ruth's... to bring her here. That's exactly what I mean.
David...
Will you help me? Or must I bribe some stranger?
David, why don't you give this thing up? It's inhuman.
Ed, if I succeed, I'll have Ruth back. Don't you see how much it means?
Well, yes, if you're successful.
Oh, I've no doubt about that. Look, I've got my laboratory record. 714 times I've performed the experiment on guinea pigs, rabbits, monkeys. 714 times it's been successful. Don't you see?
But, David, this is no laboratory experiment. Ruth was your wife.
She is my wife. The only woman I ever loved. That's why I want to bring her back here and start her breathing and living again.
There's an ugly name for what you're asking me to do, David.
I know. Grave robbery. But there's a better name for it, Ed. Death robbery. We'll rob old man Death. Kick the door shut. On the operating table.
I must say you are completely equipped.
It's surgery, just as well as a lab. Everything we need is here.
There. Well, it's done.
Not yet.
You mean you want me to stay?
Ed, listen. Ever since Ruth... Well, I guess I've leaned on you for everything. I won't ask you to stay, but I do need you. Just a little longer.
All right, David. I'll stay.
Ruth will be the first to thank you when we succeed.
David, I'll always doubt this until I see Ruth living, breathing, smiling again.
It won't be long. Just a matter of 15 or 20 minutes.
If nothing happens. What will you do if your operation doesn't work?
Then you'll have just one more job to do as my friend.
And that?
Will be to bury both of us.
Oh, now look, David.
If Ruth isn't alive again within a few minutes, I'll have lost her forever. And I'll have proved that my whole life's work is useless. I'll have reason enough to use any of a dozen tricks that any good surgeon knows. End the whole business. Oh, but don't look so horrified, Ed. We won't fail. Let's begin.
I should remind you once more, David, that you're usurping powers that belong to God Almighty.
I like to think that Providence has wisely held back the knowledge of things like this until we knew how to use them. And I know how. Hand me that large beaker.
All right. I'm not going to back out on you, David. What shall I do?
Do. You'll work as you haven't worked in surgery before. Thank heavens I've got your skill on my side. Now then, first strap the sphygmomanometer on her arm.
I just happened to think of something.
Keep moving. This is all a matter of timing.
Yeah, but, David...
Here are your instruments. I want the incision right here where I'm shaving the hair. Make a small incision just at the fontanelle while I prepare the solution.
David, have you considered...
Please work fast.
But, Dave...
What?
She was embalmed, you know.
Of course I know that. I've something to replace the blood and counteract the fluid.
Ghastly.
Finish the cut. I know what I'm doing.
Well, that's all for the incision, but after all...
It'll work, nice. Now cut away the dura mater.
Entirely? Leave the brain exposed?
Yes, yes, I'll fix that. I've done it 700 odd times.
This is no guinea pig or monkey.
Well, I hardly need reminding.
Sorry. What's that?
A compound I've synthesized myself.
What is it?
I call it digammaparadamine. Oh, I know that isn't chemically correct, but it's as close as I can get to it. I knew that something like it must exist. It took 3 years to track it down. It took me that long to make the first drop of it.
You know what you're doing, all right?
Yes, I do. Now then, if you're finished, take the leads from that storage battery there and attach the positive to the silver plate on the shelf. Put that at her feet.
I feel as if I were doing something unholy.
Place the tip of the negative in the incision you made in the skull. Be sure the tip of the wire actually penetrates the pia mater.
David, what if you bring her back?
I will bring her back.
But what if you bring her back and find she comes back without her soul?
What? Her soul?
Yes.
You're a surgeon, and you believe in a soul?
Well, I hesitate to say there is no such thing.
You've seen a good many deaths, haven't you? Have you ever seen any evidence that the soul escapes at death?
Perhaps I couldn't recognize the evidence.
Let's put it this way, then. If there is any soul, it either leaves the body or stays with it at death. Now, no reputable surgeon or physician has ever been able to report the slightest evidence of the soul's having left the body. So, the soul, if there is a soul, must stay with the body, a part of it. I'm ready now, if you've finished.
Everything's set.
Good. Close that switch, then, at the battery. Watch the meter and keep the current between plus and minus 5 of 150. There's a rheostat on the edge of the table. All right?
All right.
Now, I'm going to inject 10 cc's of adrenaline in the brachial artery.
Adrenaline?
Adrenaline and something else. There. God, she's beautiful, Ed.
Yes. She was.
She is. You'll see her in a few minutes, just as she was.
I wonder what you'll have to tell us.
Nothing. Death is only a transcendental sleep.
Do you really believe that, dear?
Oh, well, what's the difference? How's the current?
Let's see. What? It's jumped to 180.
Good. Bring it back to 150. That's the result of the injection.
On a dead body?
Let's say suspended animation. There are still a few things in surgery you don't know, aren't there?
I never dreamed of a reaction like that.
I'll show you more. Help me swing this lamp over here.
But
let the ammeter go. It'll hold steady for a minute now.
But it might jump again.
No, it won't. I've been all through this before. The reactions are exactly the same as the others.
And this lamp? X-rays?
No, it's a modification of the cathode ray. And just another of my developments. I call these our theta rays.
Why do you call them that?
Well, most rays are named for the first few letters in the Greek alphabet. Alpha, beta, gamma, and so on.
Well, that explains theta. Didn't you say R theta?
Yes. But theta was called the letter of death by the ancient Greeks.
Well, that's right. It was the first letter in the word thanatos. Death. I see. A theta without death.
Maybe I was too sentimental.
Maybe. At least human for once.
Let's not argue. Here goes the ray. Now, quickly, the solution.
Inject it?
No, pump it. I built this pump especially for it. There's the pump switch, Ed.
Here?
Yeah. Turn it on and watch the ammeter.
Okay. It's jumping.
How far?
155.
Let it go.
160. 170.
Hold it there. It'll stay there now. Listen carefully.
Yes.
As soon as I turn off the pump, I want Spigmo readings.
But there won't be any blood pressure.
Wait and see. Give me a reading each time I ask for it and take them carefully. Are you ready?
Oh, this is fantastic. I'm ready.
Okay. Reading.
Systolic zero. Diastolic zero.
That's all right. It'll take a few seconds. Now.
40.
My God. Diastolic. Hurry.
Zero.
Aortic valve still open. I'll turn off the ray. Reading.
48. Over 42. David.
Not yet. Now the stopwatch. 7 seconds after I say go, I want the systolic. Now you have it?
Right.
Ready. Now, go.
Wonder.
Ruth, darling, just a few more minutes. All right, Ed.
Now the ray again. We'll know the answer very soon.
The second act of Lights Out, starring Boris Karloff, will follow in just a moment. But now, listen to the sweetest shaving song ever written. Push-pull, click-click. Changes blades that quick. Push-pull, click-click. With the Eversharp Schick Injector Razor, yes, it clicks for men everywhere. Because the Eversharp Schick Injector Razor is the world's one and only razor with the automatic blade changer. No blades to unwrap. Fingers never touch the blade. Just push-pull, click-click. And a keen new blade is automatically locked in correct shaving position instantly. It clicks because the Eversharp Schick Injector Razor makes shaving 50% faster, 100% safer, 200% smoother. Just try the Eversharp Schick Injector Razor for 1 week. See for yourself the difference. It's a $1.75 value. Special now, only $1.25, complete with 20 blades. For the shave of your life, the rest of your life, switch to an Eversharp Schick Injector Razor. Get yours tomorrow. Push-pull, click-click. Buy an Eversharp Schick.
How long do you use the ray this time, David?
Not long. Give me a reading.
68. Over 67.
Now.
70.
Diastolic.
68.
Now.
David. 118. 76.
Close. Now.
120. That's it. 80.
The stethoscope, quick. Here. Listen.
A coma.
She's all right otherwise.
As far as I can tell, her respiration's normal, pulse just a tiny bit fast, and the reflex is slow, but apparently all right.
David, I feel I must apologize to you.
Apologize? Why?
Well, for doubting you, I suppose.
You'll learn to believe me.
Very calm in the face of all this. Do you realize that you've performed a miracle?
A miracle? I brought my wife back to me, as I promised her.
It's an unholy thing, but...
But we've conquered death. Is that unholy?
We have conquered death. May God forgive us.
She'll only wait now.
How long has she been asleep?
Let me see. 11 hours.
Hasn't spoken at all?
Not since that first scream, when she fell asleep.
Have you given her anything?
Just a few drops of brandy.
Have you tried to wake her?
No, but I think I'll try now.
Oh, wait a minute before you do.
Why?
Well, I hate to keep harping on this business about a soul, David. I realize this is no place for a philosophic discussion, but I can't help wondering why Ruth screamed when she first came back to life.
I think there's a logical explanation. After all, it must have been a physical shock.
That's true. It must also be true that there was a great mental shock involved. I think that's why she screamed, and I'm wondering whether there's been a permanent effect on her mind. Or, as I prefer to think of it, her soul.
Oh, you're simply borrowing trouble, Ed. I've never seen any sign of permanent damage in my other experiments.
Don't forget that Ruth was a human being.
Well, there's only one way to find out. I'm going to wait.
You're not afraid?
Afraid? Of what? Ruth. Ruth. Wake up, darling.
Oh, Father.
Ruth, dear, it's David speaking. Wake up, dearest. Ruth. Ruth. Darling. No wonder it scared a poor girl. Ruth, it's David, dear. I kept my promise and you're alive again. Oh, you're all right, honey. It's David,
David, what's the matter?
Ruth? God in her mind.
No, David. Her soul.
David, you'd better go out for a little exercise now.
No, I'll stay here with her.
I'll stay while you go out and walk around a bit. You've been there with her since 8 o'clock last night without any let-up. Go on, I'll stay.
Ed.
I know, old boy. I'd give anything myself if we could undo what we've done, but...
Ed, what could I do?
Well, there may be something. Let's try an experiment when she wakes up again.
What kind of an experiment?
Well, let's see if we can talk to her, get her to say anything. If we can get a flicker of intelligence, maybe we can teach her, build up from a small fragment.
Maybe it might work. I'm going to wake her up and try it.
But not now. Why don't you take a walk, relax a little, and get something to eat while you're out.
Eat? I can't eat. I'm going to wake her. Ruth.
Ruth. David, why not let her sleep?
She's waking up now. Ruth. Hello, Ruth. Are you waking up?
Poor child.
There.
She repeats after me. A little. Maybe it will work, Ed. Ruth.
Ruth!
David.
David!
It works.
Seems to. Ruth, say I want a glass of water.
Seems to.
I want a glass of water.
Water.
It's too long for her. Ruth. Say, Ruth.
Ruth.
Loves.
Loves.
David.
David.
Ruth loves David.
Ruth loves David.
Ruth loves David.
Ruth loves David. Ruth loves David.
It's working, Ed. Maybe. But what is she thinking?
I don't know.
Don't know.
Ruth, stop it.
Stop it.
Wait a minute, old man.
Ruth loves
too much for you, tired as you are. Go on, I'll take a little walk and I'll work with her for a while.
Stop.
Your nerves won't take much of this.
Oh, I guess you're right, Ed. I can't think anymore. I'll be right there.
Fine, fine. I'll take good care of her and see what I can find out.
Be patient with
her. Don't worry. I will. And you get something to eat while you're out.
All right, I'll try.
Poor guy, this is really rough on him.
Rough on him?
Ruth.
Ruth.
We're kidding ourselves. There's nothing there. She's a parrot.
Dad!
Never mind, Ruth. Ruth, put on that scalpel.
Scalpel!
You'll hurt yourself. Ruth, stay away. Don't put it down. Think of David.
David!
Oh!
Ed, for God's sake, what happened?
Ruth. Scalpel.
I'll get something and fix you right up.
Wait. No use.
Now, look.
Doctor. Artery. No hope.
Ed. All right, Doctor. Your diagnosis is correct.
A minute or two left. Ruth's hiding. Watch out. No soul. She'll kill you, too.
What have I done, Ed? Everything I've done is wrong.
Oh, wonderful technique, Doctor. Congratulations. What about soul?
Ed. Ed. Ruth. She's somewhere in the house. What if she gets out and a scalpel in her hands?
Ruth.
There's been enough damage. Ruth! Ruth! Basement. I'd better take a gun. Ruth! You'll hurt yourself. Ruth.
Ruth, no, David.
Ruth, come back.
Ruth, no, David.
Come back! Hello? Yes? Oh. Hello, Doctor. Well, I've been busy in the lab. No. No, there's nothing new. Just an experiment. No. Like so many experiments, it just didn't work out.
Eversharp Chick has just presented Boris Karloff in the first of the new series of mystery and terror stories, Lights Out. In just a moment, we'll tell you about next week's story. But first, no matter what kind of razor you use now, here's a challenge. There's a better, easier, faster way to shave. Eversharp Chick Injector Razor has banished forever 90% of the nuisance that makes shaving such a chore. Ends nuisance number one, no time wasted. Eversharp Chick Injector Razor has been proved at least 50% faster. Ends nuisance number two, it's safer. Patented guard bar prevents skin irritation, even under nose. Eversharp Chick shaves clean and smooth without skin irritation. Ends nuisance number three, nothing to take apart or put together. World's easiest razor to clean. Just rinse, shake, put away. Ends nuisance number four. No blades to unwrap. Fingers never touch the blade. Just push-pull, click-click. Because Eversharp Schick's the world's one and only razor with the automatic blade changer that locks a keen new blade, the world's sharpest blade, in correct shaving position instantly. Yes, it's 50% faster, 100% safer, 200% smoother. So for the world's quickest, easiest, cleanest shave, change to Eversharp Schick Injector Razor. It's $1.75 value, but special now for only $1.25, complete with 20 blades. Buy yours tomorrow. Next week, Lights Out will bring you a story about the undead, the vampires who are doomed to wander alone through all eternity, seeking the blood of innocent ones. Be sure to listen next Wednesday night at the same time. Lights Out is produced and directed by Bill Lawrence. The script is by Paul Pierce and Willis Cooper. This is Ken Niles speaking for Eversharp, manufacturers of Eversharp Schick Injector razors and blades, and famous Eversharp Precision writing instruments. For birthdays, weddings, anniversaries, and business gifts, remember the best gift of all is an Eversharp CA pen. Buy yours tomorrow during the sensational Eversharp CA pen sale. Buy now and save as much as 60%. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web, with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have an episode of Quiet, Please. A man rents a room from a strange old man and finds the house has secrets of its own. Enjoy Quiet, Please. Clarissa, first broadcast April 19th, 1948, on Mutual.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called Clarissa. No. He was dead before the fire started. I've told you that a dozen times. No, I can't prove it, of course not. You'll just have to believe me. Take my word for it. I can't prove he was dead. You can't prove he wasn't. And anyway, what difference does it make? Now. I'm sorry. I can't hear you very well. Yes. Well, all right. It was an old black shell of a house. A house that has lived too long. A house where the floors groaned in pain at night, where the windows shuddered at the gentlest touch of the wind. Where door latches suddenly gave up their grip and let the night come sniffing into the house to paw at your eyes and wake you to the other silences that lay around you. It was never warm there. In the winter, old Heinz kept the fire going in the fireplace in the old sitting room, but the logs were scrawny and the draft was bad, and the flames seemed to grudge us their warmth so that we shivered all through the day. We're glad when night came and we could escape to the meager comfort of the drafty bedroom. And in the summer, there was a dampness about the place. An unhealthy clamminess drifted from the walls and stirred uneasily among the ancient smells of decay that clung to the place. Well, I suppose you could call old Heinz a character. You said you didn't know him? An emigrant from the Rhineland sometime in the early 70s. That would make him, how old?
Ich war im Rheinland geboren, in der Jahrzeit 1862.
That's right, 1862. He was an old man, but he never appeared old. You might have taken him for a vigorous man of 60. His hair and his scraggly mustache were jet black. I suspect he dyed them regularly. And his blue eyes seemed as keen as those of a boy of 18. And he'd never been away from the house for a single night, he used to say, from the day he bought it and moved into it in 1888. And it was an old house then. Yes, I spent some very dreary days and nights in that house. What? I couldn't afford a better place to live. No, people don't go to live in a haunted house if they can find another place, you know. Well, yes, of course, I'd heard it was haunted before I went there to live. Do you believe in haunted houses? No, neither did I, of course. Well, I agree, it did look like a haunted house. I've told you about the sounds in the night. I mean, I've told you about some of the sounds in the night. Yes, of course, there were other sounds. Well, please, let me tell it my own way. Well, Clarissa, for instance. Clarissa in particular. Clarissa above everything else. I had lived there nearly a year. Heinz and I sat that first night alongside the fireplace. I remember he'd asked me to share a bottle of Ben Kustler Doctor with him. We sat in front of the stingy little fire. And there was a kerosene lamp on the table, and Heinz in his old black coat with the sleeves that were too short.
You like the wine then, Jesse?
Yeah, very much. Very much.
I have not much left. This is from before the war, when it was easier to get, you see. But now, well, it is almost to your last.
You shouldn't be so generous with it, Heinz.
No, no. Good wine always schmeckt besser when with a friend you drink, and it was a little more.
Not for a moment, thanks.
Yes, to sit by the fire and look down into the coals and see images of the things past. Drink wine and see the images grow clearer. It is good in the old age.
You've lived here alone for a long time?
Oh, for a long time. Long, long time. I'm used to it. Used to the nights and the little fire and the silence.
Yes.
It is cold for this time of the year.
Listen.
What's it, Louis?
Oh, I thought I heard someone singing.
So?
Did you hear anything?
It is Clarissa.
What did you say?
Clarissa, my daughter.
Well, I didn't know you had a daughter, Heinz.
Yes. Will some more wine?
No, thanks. I haven't seen her around.
No.
Well, is she... Excuse me, Heinz.
You will forgive me, Jesse. She's a child. I do not wish you to be bothered.
Why, she wouldn't bother me, Heinz. I like children.
There's enough left here in the bottle for one more for each of us, huh?
Thank you, Heinz.
And yet, schlaf wohl.
And I drank the last of the wine with the old man. And then I climbed the creaking stairs to the dreary little room, carrying the kerosene lamp in one hand and casting fabulous shadows on the peeling wallpaper. Seeing the ancient plush-covered rocking chair nodding away at me as I entered the room, as if a startled occupant had suddenly deserted it at the sound of my footsteps on the stairs. And the cold spring rain drenching the window panes. And the murmured complaints of the beams and rafters of the old house. The pleasant, musty fumes of the wine I had drunk kept sleep away for a while when I'd blown out the lamp. The melody of that children's song flowed again across my mind as I lay there. My thoughts wandered to the lonely child that dwelt in the haunted house with the old man and the new come student. I smiled to myself as I thought, now that settles the question of the house being haunted, doesn't it? People have heard the little girl singing to herself in the night. They've not known that a little girl lived here too, and yeah, thus the ghost. And I smiled again at superstitions. And another idle thought struck me. I wondered at the child's age. 10 or 12 years old by the sound of her voice. And somewhere in the back of my drowsy mind, I seem to remember that Heinz had told me Helena, his wife, had died... When was it, the year of the San Francisco earthquake? Well, that would be 1906. That would be 42 years ago. And this was a child of 10 or 12. I must have been mistaken. I was getting sleepy. Wine, the rain, the dark. I slept. Well, you wanted the whole story. I'm telling it to you. In the morning, Heinz was working in his garden, and the early sun made the old house seem a little more cheerful, a little more livable. There was a tinge of green through the gray of the fields that surround the house, and Heinz told me he'd seen a robin. I stood and watched him a long time, and I don't think he noticed how my eyes wandered to the windows of the old house, searching for a flash of color that might be a child's hair ribbon, or how I listened for the sound of a young boy singing a little song of the children who danced so long ago on the bridges of Avignon. I didn't even notice that I was humming a song under my breath.
Shall I pull Avignon? Yes, Clarissa's song, Nick.
What? Oh.
Well, that's Clarissa's song.
A kid used to sing it when I was young.
Yeah, my wife is French. She taught the song to Clarissa.
Oh?
Yeah, it is an old song.
How old is your daughter, Heinz?
Eh?
How old?
Oh, she's young.
Is she pretty?
Oh, yeah. You had breakfast?
Coffee. I found it on the stove.
Clarissa made it.
Oh, did she?
You'd better go to work now, huh?
Yes, I suppose so. You don't need to keep the little girl out of sight on my account, Heinz. I like children.
Oh, she bothers you.
Oh, no, I've got a little sister back home.
Oh, yeah?
Miriam. She's 11.
Clarissa is older.
Oh? Miriam's got bright yellow hair.
Clarissa has dark hair.
Yeah, I got a picture of her here.
Oh, so? She's very pretty. I have no picture of Clarissa.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I see you tonight, huh?
Yes. Yeah, sure, Heinz. I should have let the thing drop then and there. If the old man felt that children should be kept away from adults, that was his privilege, of course. And although I was often lonely for other company than the old man, I was a dweller in his house, naturally subject to his wishes. My work? No, I never left the place. My book. I was writing a book. No, not very exciting. Mathematics. I have some theories. No, the book is gone. The fire, you remember? I could understand Heinz, I thought. He obviously had a great respect for a man's work, especially a work of such apparent erudition. I must not be disturbed. I might stay in my room day and night with my slide rules and my profile paper and my broken flower pot full of sharpened pencils. I was not to be disturbed. But how many times I wished for the happy sound of my little sister Miriam's gay laughter. Found myself listening for the lilt of the little girl song that she used to sing. And that Clarissa knew, too. Heinz mentioned Clarissa occasionally.
I sometimes wish that I could have sent Clarissa to school, Jesse.
Why, it's too bad you didn't.
Always there is never enough money or...
Why, there are schools. Public schools, Heinz.
No, not for Clarissa's free schools.
You know, I wonder...
Wonder?
Well, you know, children are supposed to go to school. I'm surprised that the school authorities haven't been to see about sending her.
The police?
Oh, no, not the police. But there are laws about schools. I mean, you might find yourself in trouble if they discover you have a daughter of school age.
They will come here.
If they find out.
Jesse, you will not tell.
Now, look here, Heinz. You're not being fair to the child.
But yes, yes.
No, really, I mean it. Hasn't she ever been to school?
Well, I teach her a little.
Well, Heinz, it's none of my business. But you're doing her a very serious harm.
No, no. Listen, Jesse. You don't tell anybody about her.
Well, I don't know, Heinz. If they come and ask me...
Jesse, listen. I tell you something.
Well?
Clarissa can't go to school.
Well, why not? I told you it doesn't cost anything.
It is not that.
Well, then?
She's not well.
Oh, I'm sorry, Heinz. Look, would you like it if I gave her a little of my time and taught her some of the elementary...
No, please, don't.
Well, I'd be glad to.
No.
Well, have it your way, Heinz. I don't mean to intrude on your affairs, but after all, a child...
I'm sorry, Jesse. I thank you, but no.
All right. Forget it. But I couldn't forget it. A kindly old man. Yes, he was kindly. And a sick child who had never seen the inside of a schoolroom, who was growing up to become... what? In an ancient, moldering house. A house that had lived too long. Alone with a father born 86 years ago. Alone at night in the darkness with the house grumbling and complaining around me. I thought about the plight of the child. Sometimes I could hear her song far away somewhere in the dank recesses of that crumbling house. And my thoughts revolved again about this mystery. Heinz said she was not well. Heinz would not allow her to appear. Was Clarissa some misshapen monster child that she must be pent up and never see the sun? Was she... I detest mysteries of that kind. I love the good, clean mysteries of abscissa and ordinate, the logarithm and antilogarithm of the calculus and the grand old theorems devised by the ancients. But the fascinating mysteries of the human mind and of human behavior are alien to me. Them I hate. And my thoughts crept further and further away from the 10 numbers as doubt and speculation about the child laid hold of my mind. In the night, how often I heard her sobs, I thought, sometimes close outside my door. And yet when I opened the door, there was nothing. And old Heinz grew more and more taciturn. He never spoke of his daughter. He seemed to avoid me by day and to disappear by night. But the summer came then, and the fall, and winter. My book was going badly, and my thoughts wandered. I must leave this place, I thought, or find out this mystery. And again I asked the old man if there was not something I might do for this pathetic child, this invisible, haunting voice.
No, Jesse. There is nothing you could do.
But Christmas is coming, Heinz. What can I get her for a Christmas
gift? No, why not, Jesse?
What?
My Helene. She died on the eve of Christmas.
Well, but Heinz, you owe it to the child.
No. Let us not speak of it again.
But to me, the thought of Christmas passing by this child was unspeakable. I determined that if the old man would do nothing about it, I would. You know, I had little money, and there was so little I could do. But I did come into the town here, and I found a toy for her. I found one I could afford. A little woolly lamb. A little woolly white lamb with black buttons for eyes and a blue silk ribbon about its neck and a gay little blue flower in its mouth. I hung a little card about its neck that said, "Merry Christmas to Clarissa." And on Christmas Eve, Heinz and I shared the last bottle of Ben Kostler Doctor before the miserly little fire. And I gave him one of the handkerchiefs my little sister Miriam had sent me, and he gave me an old stone krug with a heavy pewter top that he said came from Heidelberg. And we regretted that there was no creamy Pilsner Urquell to drink from it. Wished each other a happy Christmas. And then, in the night, I was awakened by a tiny sound. And I lay awake silently for a moment. And there was another sound. A hesitant little footstep. And the rustling at the dresser across the room from me. And I lay quietly and listened. Is that you, Clarissa? Is that you, Clarissa? Do you like it? Good. Happy Christmas. I'm sorry. That's all I could get you. But I hope you like it. And I felt the touch of a tiny hand on my shoulder. And lips brushed my cheek. And the door closed. And the sound of her voice in the little song was happier now than I'd ever heard it. Clarissa was not a ghost, but a living person. And I felt more at peace with myself as I realized that this was what had been plucking at the corners of my mind. And I was happy now that I knew she really lived, that I was not living in the midst of fantasy. I had wondered what Heinz would say. He was perfectly natural about it.
It was good of you, Jesse.
Good? What?
To find a gift for Clarissa.
Oh, did she like it?
Ah.
Well, I'm glad.
She asked me to say Dankeschön to you.
Well, then I say Bitte schön.
Ah, it is good. You're a kind person, Jesse.
I wish it could have been more.
Oh, it is a very rich gift. Never has she had such a thing.
Is she going to have Christmas dinner with us, Heinz?
No.
So, I had won a little victory in this conflict with the darkness, but I was to go no further. I asked Heinz about her. Heinz answered shortly. I suggested that a birthday gift might be in order if I only knew her birthday. I proposed writing to my own sister and begging her for outworn storybooks that Clarissa might read, even if she must stay aloof from the rest of the house. Heinz did not reply. Everything was as it had always been, so long as the name of Clarissa was not mentioned. But a night came in the late spring when it was cold and windy again, and the raw snow pelted against the windows and the whole house shivered. I heard her crying again in the night, and there was a quality in her voice this time that brought me out of the bed and into the hall. I called in alarm.
Clarissa!
I stepped back into my room and lit the kerosene lamp. And as I stepped out again toward the hallway, Heinz confronted me.
What's my hunting, Jesse?
Why, can't you hear her, Heinz? Something's wrong. She's sick.
No, go back by your room, Jesse.
Oh, but Heinz!
No pity, Jesse! Go back.
Now, Heinz, listen to me. Something's awfully wrong with that child, and
I will take care of her, Jesse.
Please, Heinz.
In your room.
Now, see here, I
take care of my own, mein Herr. Heinz!
I reached for the door at once, but it was locked from the outside. And I beat on it and stormed at it in the cold. But for once it held. I screamed at the father, threatening every kind of vengeance on him, till at last I suddenly realized that I was being hysterically silly. In the silence, I could hear nothing but the moan of the wind around the rusty cornices of the house and the hiss of snowflakes against the window. I sat down, shaken, bitter at myself for giving way to such an outburst over a child crying in the night. And at last I lay down again. And in the frosty silence of the early dawn, I fell asleep. And when I awoke hours later and found my door unlocked again, Heinz was not to be found. Not that day, nor the next. I tramped through the house, opening doors, calling him, calling Clarissa. There was not a sound to answer me. I found a little wood and made a miserable fire. I suppose I ate. I don't remember any too well. And at night I went to bed to lie shivering for hours, straining my ears for a sound. sound of a child's song, the sound of a father's footstep in the cold darkness. Then it was morning, nearly morning. Gray fingers of morning plucking at the frost-rimed windows. And I awoke to see Hines standing beside my bed. In the 2 days, he seemed to have aged 20 years. He was an old, old man. He spoke to me.
Jesse, my friend.
What's the matter, Hines?
No much matter, Jesse. I am dying.
Hines!
It is finished now, Jesse. Alles is vorüber.
Here, sit down.
No, no. Hear me. See, the key to Clarissa's room. You take it.
Is she all right? Hines!
Too late for me now. Go. Clarissa's room. Do what is to be done.
I lifted him to the bed. I bent over him. I listened for his heart. There was no sound. Hines was dead. Yes, just as I told you before, he died. He died there in my room, yes. What? Oh, yes. In the little half-light, I found the kerosene lamp and I lit it. I took the key from the floor where he dropped it. No, I found the room very easily. It was at the far end of the hall. I called. Clarissa? Clarissa! And there was no answer, so I unlocked the door. And holding the light above my head, I walked over to the bed. And there, lying on the bed, dressed in a pinafore that might have come out of a 10-year-old drawing in Alice in Wonderland, clutching a little woolly lamb to her breast, there lay a tiny, old, old woman with long white hair braided into pigtails. Clarissa. And I knew why I hadn't heard the little song for 2 days. And so when the lamp dropped out of my hand and the flame started licking around the dry-as-dust draperies and the fragile old oaken boards on the floor, I turned and went out of the house. Well, what else was there to do? The house had lived too long. And so had the father and daughter who dwelt there. Bruno Vick, Clarissa, by Peggy Stanley. As usual, music for Quiet Please is by Albert Berman. Now a word from our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
The characters in tonight's Quiet Please are neither living nor dead. They enjoy neither of these interesting conditions because they're solely the invention of my own imagination intended to represent nobody at all. Quiet Please for next week. It's called 13 and 8.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
Quiet Please comes to you from New York.
This is the world's largest network, serving more than 450 radio stations, the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying, so long for a while.